Welcome to Talk Farm to Me, the podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. It's for people like you who care about their personal and family health, saving the planet with real choices that actually have an impact, and building strong, thriving local and regional economies. Have you ever seen a farmer sit besides on a tractor? Here, they sit and they dish about life on the farm, about the industry they're in, and about what they want you to know that you might be overlooking. Don't listen to the headlines without some input from a farmer who lives it. When you have listened to all of the episodes, from the small first-time farmers to the most seasoned, and even some famous farmers, you will have a powerful 35,000-foot view of farming in America and how it impacts your food, your personal and family health, your environment, your wallet, and your community. I thought you would like to know that Talk Farm to Me is included in college curriculum and as homework for students in courses related to food systems and anthropology. The podcast consistently ranks in the top 25 of agricultural podcasts and the top 5 of podcasts globally. I am so glad you are here tuning in with me today. I hope you will subscribe so you never miss an episode, and that you'll write a review so that others can see what you think and tune in too. I am your host, Dana DePrima. I have spent the past 15 years running my own little farm, walking nearly a mile in a farmer's work boots, and I have had the privilege of talking with farmers on this podcast since 2019. It has been a wild ride, and I have learned a ton on this dusty farm road. I am eager to share it all with you. Today, you are in for a treat. We go all the way from wherever you are listening, your car or your kitchen, perhaps, to the small island of Kodiak, Alaska, where fifth-generation farmer Kelly Foreman runs a family goat dairy. Kelly Foreman grew up on a small farm in Nebraska, so she has always been familiar with the benefits of small family farms. But it wasn't until she started a small farm herself on this remote island in Alaska where she realized the importance of small farms in feeding the local community. Kelly emphasizes the lost art of character building when children are involved in family farming through the daily grunt work, as well as helping to make tough decisions about the life or death of an animal. I think you will be inspired by Kelly and how her work on a remote island in Alaska sheds light on the fragility of our food supply system and how we can overcome that on a micro local level. You have a real mission that you are sharing, and you're not trying to tell people to be farmers. You're not trying to tell anybody to do anything, but you have a mission, and I wanted to hear what your perspective is on that.
It's really interesting. I didn't ever think that I would continue on and be a farmer or to have a lot of the passions that I really do hold, but I do. And I think one of the ones that really I've just been so burdened by is the loss of the small farmer. And in that, you lose a lot of the small farm benefits. It's not just providing food, it's everything else around that. You know, I was a small farm kid. So we were extremely a part of every aspect that was going on within our farming operation every day. We felt the hurt firsthand. It wasn't some other 800th employee, which those are important, but it was us. It was my dad. It was my mom. You know, when the hail came, it was like, go walk out and look at the fields. Look what we have to deal with. But at the same time, we had the joy of celebrating new life. So we were more connected really with our food. And then further, we were farming next to our neighbors who also maybe needed help. I grew up understanding the community of farming, the importance of being connected. And so the larger a farming industry gets, the larger corporations snatch up those small farms, you're losing the character that has built, I think, a lot of our nation.
This is such an important point. Think about that for a minute. The connection from farm to farm, the rural network holding our towns and communities together. I interviewed a professor from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, a dairy expert, who told me about a study that focused on non-farmers. Among other things, the results showed that we expect in our subconscious, in the very depths of our being, we expect to see rolling fields and barns and silos and cows dotting rural landscapes. And when small farms go, we lose that. We lose the connection and that character that Kelly talks about. And she walks the talk. Her three boys are learning about their food, their community, the challenges of hard work, helping neighbors, and making tough decisions on the farm. We will get to that. But I wanted to ask you to think more deeply about what goes when we lose farms. It's more than just the farm. The folks who are listening who are not farmers, yeah, who maybe work in a high-rise, maybe live in a small town, maybe live in a suburb with cute little trees lining the street. What are they missing? What is happening because our small farmers are disappearing?
It's more local food. I think that's a large one for me with the disappearing of our small farms. What I see is it's the people that have the ability to grow things are not growing things as much because we can just go to the grocery store and get them for a lot. It's easier to go buy eggs and have to have chickens, you know? And so the disappearing of those small farmers, well, it puts all the food in one little hand over here.
Small family farms are being squeezed out of existence largely due to the widening disparity between shrinking incomes and surging expenses, along with the growing influence of massive agribusinesses. Despite 88% of farms still being family or individually owned, there's a noticeable shift towards a more corporate model. These major agribusiness players aren't confined to local farming alone. They're deeply involved in the nationwide spectrum, engaging in the distribution, processing, storage, and retail aspects of farm products. The outcome of this, for example, is one milk carton containing milk from 100 cows.
And I'm optimistic always. Like, I really think that doctors want the best for us. I think they love people. I think that's why they got into it. I even think a large grocery store doesn't want to hold food from people. However, if I can produce it myself, if I can help supply that locally, well, it does put a little power back into the people's hands. It makes us less dependent on people we don't know, more community building, bonding, growing. It brings it back. I run a micro dairy. I'm grade A, but I don't have to deal with a lot of the same issues that these ginormous dairies have to deal with because I'm small scale.
A grade A dairy farm is one that complies with strict standards set by regulatory authorities to ensure the quality and safety of milk produced for human consumption. These standards cover aspects such as milk quality, hygiene, sanitation, facility and equipment standards, regular inspections, and thorough record keeping. Meeting grade A standards allows dairy farmers to sell their milk directly for human consumption.
I like more localized food, small production. You know your farmer, you see what's going on, and the quality of your food, I think, increases. That might be a whole nother point too. I think the nutritional denseness of our food decreases the larger and larger these farmers get and less we have our small farms.
So you're connecting a dot from healthy soil into the carrot is very different than if it's on a big industrial farm.
Big time. We grow a lot of our own soil here. So I'm watching that soil grow, and it's the connection between the manure and the wood chips and all the things. And then you unpack that and you have this soil that's like alive with earthworms, and you smell what used to be manure, and it's this dense, fabulous soil. And then that's going to grow you your food, or the animals, like our cattle over, we have a nearby island, they're eating that grass and the kelp and your different things. I know that the quality, the nutritional benefits are so much more dense with this food than that which I get from the store. And it's just when you increase the production, when you have to make large scale productions, you just kind of lose some of that. And I think that hurts our kids. We have kids that end up not nutritionally prepared to learn at school. It's just an unfortunate piece, I think.
So when you were saying you have a micro dairy and you're not experiencing the same kinds of issues that big dairy, draw that out for me a little bit.
Sure. So micro dairy, we're small. I know every single animal, most of all the goats at this point I have birthed that are here, or I remember when I got them. They have personalities and character. And I know, gosh, if Jelly Beans had a bad day, or if I pushed her off the milk, she's going to produce less milk for me the next day. Or I'm touching every single udder. And again, I'm the main farmer, but gosh, I know if it's just a little hotter, I can feel that. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to test that milk to make sure we're okay. You don't get that in a large scale dairy. So you say you have 800 cattle that you're milking, you have one cow with a hot udder. Well, that's going to go in there and it's going to just go into the mix of milk and it's not a big deal.
If a cow's udder is feeling hot, it might be due to something like mastitis, which is an infection. This can mess with the milk it produces, causing changes in appearance, less milk, and even introducing bacteria. The milk from a cow with mastitis is not really suitable for human consumption, so monitoring a cow's udder on a regular basis is crucial for the health of the cow and the milk it produces.
For me, every single one of those guys really counts. And so that's what you get with a small farmer. You get the quality. And I understand we have to have large scale to a certain extent, but I think if you have the means to, if you are able to go small, do it. Support your local people. But even I go sometimes like, oh, this is family farm and operated. You hear that all the time. Like you look on your nutritional label or they show the beautiful little farm scene. That is not where your cheese just came from. That little farm scene does not exist within a large radius of where that came from.
I agree with you. I've been thinking about this for a while, actually, that 98% of our farmers are family farms. I could have a multinational corporation and it could be owned by my family. It's like we're family washing these farms.
I look at the people that are saying that. I'm like, well, yeah, but where's your family at? My boys are out there milking early in the morning when I'm gone because this is actually operated by the family here. We run the books and we run the manure. We're doing all parts. We don't get the luxury of hiring that out. And that's the other part. Like when my boys are out there working, I'm going to pay them. If they're in the dairy, I want to pay them for that work. That's an important work. And I want to pay them at a really quality price that they see that there's value in the little tasks. And I think that can be a tricky slope. The larger you get, you end up having those tasks go to other people. And maybe that family farm, those kids don't get to experience all the manure side of things. What made it that quality family farm in the very beginning, back when it started, you're missing that because these kids don't get the dirty work side because you have other people hired to do that. So they're going to start at the corporate level up here. But what made that a quality family farm was the fact that as other kids were kids, they did the crappy jobs that kids don't get to experience anymore. So the family farm, yeah, it's doesn't mean maybe what it used to.
I love seeing you engaging with your boys out there. It's great to really see that. Tell me what they're getting from being a part of the farm, having responsibility. Do you have screens? Is that a problem?
We have screens. I don't think you can get past world. And we're a little bit different maybe than some other circles. Like my kids go to public school. I'm thankful for that. They are definitely involved in a lot of activities. I take it as they're going to have to live in that world. I would like them to be exposed to that world and have the safety of home to come home to learn about that world. But then they also get a lot of farm work and it can be tricky, but we push them into it. And they don't always want to do chores. Like when I had my knee surgery and it was 6 weeks of them waking up 7 days a week at 5:30 a.m., that was a lot to ask of my kids. And I did feel bad about it. However, my husband, he's like, don't feel bad about it. This will be something they will take the rest of their lives. Yes, they're milking goats, but more so they are being active participants in our family here and really having to be helpful. I'm not expecting them to be farmers by any means. I think through these experiences, whether they're a carpenter, a doctor, a teacher, it will make them a better human at the end to just understand whether it even just be life and death. Hard work, not ever being too good to do the dirtiest job. And to be honest, to volunteer first, to be the volunteer to do the dirty job.
Bonus points.
Yes. Yeah. And we do it together as a family a lot of the time. So we are learning. And my boys have had to see, like, when a birth does not go well and we are sitting there and we're having to make tough choices, they're part of those tough choices. And to see there's no good answer, but we're going to make one, we're going to go with it. And then we're going to deal with our emotions that we're going to have. There was once we had a really bad moment. And I told him, I was like, I need you to step it up right now. You can cry in about 20 minutes. But right now, no, it's a no. And they're like, okay, mom, okay. And I think we all did cry. Like a half an hour afterwards, we all sat down. I'm like, this was horrible. But for those 20 minutes, we held it together.
Now, talk to me a little bit about the community that you're in. I think very hard for people who don't live in Alaska to picture where you live and how it works.
A disconnected remote island is what I say. So it's an hour plane ride to Anchorage or a 13-hour, between 10 and 13-hour boat ride to Homer, the mainland, from where we are at. And then it's another four-hour drive to Anchorage. So we are really out there. I kind of joke, we didn't need the pandemic for our shelves to be empty because the shelves are frequently empty. 98% of everything in Kodiak is brought in by boat or by plane. So if the boat can't necessarily make it because of seas, they maybe will try to freight in food by plane. That automatically increases all of our prices. So I was just down in Nebraska and I was so excited because I could get watermelon for less than like $20, a watermelon. And it's super rare that watermelon's ever under $20. Bananas will be like between $1.20 and $1.79 a pound for us in Kodiak. And it just keeps going the further north you get as far as prices. It rains. We're a temperate rainforest. So it rains a lot of the time, lots of dark, dreary days in the winter. It's a different kind of place, that's for sure.
And how did you end up there from Nebraska?
I did not want to be a farmer. So I was trying to decide, where would I go that I can live this really amazing outdoor, like I love to hike and be outside and fish. And I was like, Alaska, like that is totally not farming. And I came up to work at Kodiak Baptist Mission as a summer day camp volunteer. And then as I was getting done with college, I was like, you know, I think I could do my college internship up there. I was a communication major. I thought I'll go and compile some of their historical stuff. I'll put some videos together. And not really into working with kids. Anyway, that's where I've been for about the last 19, 20 years. I'm now the assistant executive director for Kodiak Baptist Mission. So I run a state licensed childcare program. And then we do a lot of community outreach things. So doing different events. And then originally I started the farm thinking, how could I reach kids the best? And I was like, character, I developed the best character through the farm. And so we started little farm camps for kids. And then somewhere along there, it became a grade A certified dairy. And I don't know why that I felt that was needed. But now we are the only grade A goat dairy in the state.
Now, you say it like, oh, I kind of accidentally became a farmer. You're a fourth generation farmer.
Fifth on both sides, both my parents and all the way back. We are farmers. And it truly, I think it's just in your blood to do it. It's interesting because this has been a personal struggle with me. I have this idea of commercialized farming. I'm like, I want to grow. I want to serve more people. I want to feed more people. But it's different now than it used to be. And that's where I'm like, oh, I need to stay small to be able to make the best impact for our island. I don't want to ship off island. I want to stay here. I want to do the best I can to be as supportive as I can for our island.
And how many people are in Kodiak?
We have 13,000 on the entire island. And so we have 7 rural villages. So that's either another boat or plane ride. And then we also have the largest Coast Guard base in the nation here. And that's kind of a community outside of Kodiak, but they're included in that number too. So a pretty transient community here.
I'm so impressed that you have an off-farm job because it seems like you have so much work to do on the farm.
Sometimes it's too much. It works though. I just have to be really thoughtful in scheduling and be as efficient as I can. And I know like there are times that I have good efficiency in my brain, like mornings, good efficiency. By the time I get to 2-3 in the afternoon, there's not high functioning efficiency. So I just need to go outside and do work, but I can still work and I'm still worth something at that point. It's just not up in the mind.
My gosh, we are the same. I am so smart in the morning. And then I save all the dumb things for like 3 o'clock. Tell me about what you see as your biggest challenges as a small farmer now.
Financially, it's tricky. Well, we got this amazing grant and you were able to help through the grant. I was able to have straw for the entire baby goat season. Straw is so expensive. And I was like, I need $500 worth of straw, please. And it was fantastic.
Small-scale farmers in the United States often seek financial support from various avenues. This includes accessing government grants, or grants from organizations like our Four Farmers Movement, and subsidies for sustainable farming practices, cooperative ventures where farmers collaborate, and community support are integral to their financial strategy. Diversification, such as engaging in agrotourism or selling to larger markets, is common as small farmers navigate the trickiness of financially sustaining their operations.
So prices, just little things like straw that end up being big barriers. I think we continually have the challenges to be viable. I think that there is the push a little bit to try and get rid of that small farmer, not necessarily by the consumers, but like I just had the FDA come and I was like, you definitely don't want to deal with me. And they had to come for inspections and things. We just are not even on the same page. She's like, what is this? And I was like, this is my milking system. It's small. You haven't seen it because you don't normally see anything less than 800 cows. But I think that it's easier to say, gosh, these prices, like I still need you to do all the things at this level. That's hard for a small farmer, just not bringing in as big of an income. And so to stay small and viable will be tricky. It's possible though, with local support. I think that's where for me, the Instagram side is so big. And it's that little voice to say, find your local farmer, find somebody to support and really try to just support small, because those barriers continue to grow with the ever-increasing restraints.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if I'm doing a good enough job explaining why the non-farmer need a small farmer in your community. Yes, it's food. Yes, it's choices. It's options. It's your health. It's your community. It's your environment. You care about the environment. This is the best way to do it. I really believe it so deeply that we need small farmers, and I see them disappearing. And I love that you brought up the hay. You were not the only, there were two farmers that got hay. You got straw and the Arizona farmer got $500 in hay. And thank goodness that we've got farmers on our review team and from all over the country, because as a reviewer, you need to understand why. That is not sexy. We granted hay. Like, yeah. Aren't we amazing? But it really has an impact.
Yeah, that hay equated to 50 baby goats that didn't have pneumonia, that were able to thrive. And to be honest, I don't want to sound cold, because it's the best thing. At the end of the day, I'm in the people business. That's really where it comes down to. So those goats fed 50 low-income families here that could not afford to go to the grocery store to get this meat. And families that are migrants into Kodiak that are not traditionally from here, but goodness, having goat is such a cultural deal for their families and to be able to pass those things on. So yeah, it's straw that actually fed a lot of families. And it's exactly what you said, that small farm thing, they would have completely been overlooked. But I knew this is a cultural thing. This is a family thing. And that's the neat part about the small farm, because you still hear those stories too. And I hadn't really put all that together until right now. That entire situation is such a community builder And a lot of those families are what continue to keep our island moving. It's just, it's neat to see that. I appreciate the one thing that I will say now that I have you here about your grant that I so appreciated was that you're like, here it is, and just put up a story and let us know. It wasn't like 800 different hoops to jump through because we are small. We're doing all of the things. And I was like, is this really it? I get to use this right now? That was probably by far the most memorable grant or money received for that reason.
Kelly was in the first round of farmers to be awarded a Four Farmers grant. This podcast is a part of the Four Farmers movement, too. A key part of the mission is to share farmers' stories so you can get to know them and what they mean to you personally and to the world that we live in. When they are invisible, they disappear because we have failed to recognize and support them. The Four Farmers movement also awards grants to farmers like Kelly. She is one of 75 farmers who received a Four Farmers grant in year one. You can learn more about it at the Four Farmers Movement website at fourfarmersmovement.com. And yes, it's in the show notes.
What do we do from here? I think you're doing your part. You have your mission. You've got your messages. I have mine, and hopefully Four Farmers will make a dent. I think what I'm looking for is a consciousness for people who aren't farmers to understand. But what do we do about the future of farming? What can we do first to keep the small farming alive?
That's a great question. It takes us being active. We had a thing in Alaska for a while. This was like $5, $5 challenge. If you spend $5 on Alaskan produce or something Alaskan grown a week, it would just make an incredible change for our state. But I think that that can be for anyone. Just find a way that you, one way, just one little singular way, like where can you divert your money? You know, people talk about that. Vote with your dollar. Vote again. Vote for that small farmer with your dollars, because that's really where it comes down to. But it's going to take a mind shift. I think, like, what's the easiest way out? You know, it was my dad, like, don't be a dairy farmer, Kelly. That's too much work. Why would you do that to yourself? Well, maybe not that message, Dad. You know, maybe it's the, wow, that is a big undertaking. Let's find you support for that. I think for me, one of the most motivating pieces as a small farmer is just to have somebody really say, thank you. This was awesome. Like, your cheese is so good. Thank you for that. I don't even need money for it. They'll happily give it to you. I think most small farmers will. I think the motivation that really drives a small farmer are those words of affirmation that we appreciate you. You're doing a good job. I think that that will go a long way. Yeah, you need money in the bank. You absolutely need money in the bank. But all the money in the world can't make up for the motivation and the passion underneath it. Because you can find the money. But if you lose that motivation and passion, that's hard to get back.
I agree. Sometimes people ask me, they're like, can't they just apply directly for a grant? I'm like, yes, of course. I said, but what if you were at your job, you work in a bank, and what if somebody you didn't know showed up and said to you, you're doing a great job and I want to nominate you for a grant? And they're like, oh, I get it. Because that's part of it. We have to recognize our small farmers for the hard work that they do.
I have no idea who nominated me for that grant. I actually looked you up and I was like, is this real? Like, no. Nobody does that. And then I was like, some of them really did that. And then it really turns into, well, I guess if they felt that I was worth nominating, I'm going to follow this through, you know, and that was really neat.
Yeah. I love it when people don't know. They're like, who nominated me? I was like, you have a secret admirer. That's a great thing. Like I said, I can share some information about you, but give me a farm profile. We know there are goats for the dairy. Yeah.
I am very big on mixed species, diversified farming. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. I don't want to be a monocrop farmer. So we have the goats there. Our goat milk, primarily cheese, all those things. They do go to protein, but the milk is the big part. We have sheep. The sheep, Their main purpose are my grazers. They are my weed mitigation program, so I don't have to spray. And a byproduct on the side, they have wool. And then we send that off and get our yarn back from them. We have cattle. Now, the cattle are right across. We lease land on an island just right across. And so we have about 35 free-range cattle that I joke are grass-fed, kelp-finished. So just grass and kelp, they are really completely self-sustainable over there, which is a kind of an anomaly for Alaska. We're a place that has to get everything in. So that's kind of a project always working. Our governor even has been like, how do you do that? We need to figure that out, you know, so as food sustainability. The chickens, we have too many chickens right now, but I decided earlier this year, I'm like, I'm going to let the chickens go free range, like strongest survival. They've all survived. The crows and magpies have kept all the eagles away, and we have not lost any chickens. And their feed costs have gone clear down. So that's been really neat. We have the chickens, a few ducks. They're really just for our emotional happiness because they're always happy. And then I have a small little pig operation. I think when you have milk and whey, I know you could do something with the whey. I'd prefer to give it to the hogs. And so I always keep one breeding sow, and then she has two litters of piglets a year. So I'm on my second litter right now. We have 11 little guys running around down there right now. I think that's it. Dogs, cats, you know, that type of thing. Oh, and we have horses and a mule.
Almost forgot about them.
Those do not do anything for the farm, but kids love to ride them. And so we do horse camps and things in the summer.
Really incredible what you have going on there. And it sounds like some models for your state.
We're doing our best. I'm serving on a food sustainability task force that we're just trying to work on some sustainability for Alaska.
Is there anything else that you want to share?
Will Harris, he had made a comment, and I think that this was really profound.
Will Harris is a farmer in Bluffton, Georgia at White Oak Pastures. He has been on this podcast, and I will link his episode in the show notes. Absolutely worth a listen. He's a revolutionary who transformed his family farm that operated industrially into a regenerative model. He is a real source of inspiration and an authority.
I said, you don't have to necessarily grow your own food, but you should be thoroughly pleased with whoever is growing that food and the practices that they have to do it. I liked that. I like the idea that, nope, we all cannot grow our own food. It's not possible. But do your best to be as thrilled as you can with the people that are and the practice that they're keeping. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. You know, I have a few people like, we don't want to know where our food's coming from. It's too much. I'm like, that's fine. I'm probably not for you. And well, my son Landry made that comment when we were butchering our chickens this year. He's like, I was really worried about this, Mom. I thought I wasn't going to be able to eat chicken anymore. Because he's like, I've never been part of this. And I was like, well, how do you feel? He's like, no, I'm good with it. I'm okay. And I thought that was good that he saw the whole process. And he said, no, I can eat this and be okay with it. Those are all decisions we need to make. Know where your food comes from. Be thoroughly thrilled. And then just eat the diversified palate. Try the new things. And the other part, lastly, is that when you get from a small farmer, when you don't have corporate food, food tastes different. Food's supposed to taste different. And my milk's not going to exactly taste the same from week to week. It shouldn't. Strawberries in October are not going to taste like strawberries in June. And I think that changing that mindset to have realistic expectations and enjoy the food. You know, when you go to other countries, there are just times you don't get certain foods. Don't expect your avocado to taste amazing all the time.
I hope that Kelly has you thinking differently and more deeply about the impact that shopping from a small local farmer can have on your dinner and your community. She always has me thinking. This has been another episode of Talk Farm to Me, a podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. Since you are still here with me, can you do me a really helpful favor and share this with a friend? You can share this episode right from the app you're listening in, and you can also just share the whole show and let them pick out the episode that calls out to them most. Talk Farm to Me is an integral part of For Farmers, a movement founded to support American farmers with annual grants by sharing their stories and by bringing you closer to farmers with small actions that have a big impact on the farming ecosystem and you. You may be interested to note that Talk Farm to Me is consistently in the top 20 agricultural-themed podcast and is ranked in the top 5% of all podcasts globally. Talk Farm to Me is included in the curriculum on college campuses and used to engage students in deeper, firsthand understanding of what farmers face. Thanks for talking farm with us today, filling our insatiable curiosity about what's going on with farmers so we can better understand and deconstruct our concerns about the future of food, the environment, and our economies. Don't forget to check the show notes for important links mentioned in the show, as well as other resources, including how to subscribe to the weekly letter, submit your own rating for the show, super helpful for spreading the word, and connect on socials. I am always delighted to hear from you. Talk Farm to Me is produced by me, with help from Sonia Dillon, and original music and sound design by Russell Chapa. I can't wait to be here with you again for the next episode, maybe at a farm not too far from you.